Welcome back to How Do I Get Your Job? Today, we're interviewing Jeff Tao, a senior engineering manager at Promethean, who's also about to start a new job as the engineering director at permission.io. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing today?
Doing wonderful.
So what's your current job right now, and what does your day-to-day sort of look like?
So right now, I'm in between jobs. I just left Promethean, where I was the head of the firmware organization, and I will be joining permission.io on Monday as the engineering director. The day-to-day job in my case, it's really about running the organization, making sure we have our firmware needs that can support all our millions of teachers, customers out there that uses Promethean's hardware. So including the active panel series and the OPSG, OPSM, and various peripheral devices. All of those are like smart devices. So it requires a customized Android firmware to make it work with all kinds of Promethean specific features, add-ons, value add-ons, if you will. In order to do that, my organization is essentially owns the task of building up a customized Android operating system. And that's something that have to work with the specific firmware and hardware. The firmware need to go with hardware that we're building. That means we have close relationship with all the hardware vendors that's building the actual device for us. And the firmware will get installed on it, get tested on it. All our new features need to work hand in hand with the specific new hardware that come out of the product line. And my job is essentially making sure, A, we can support the existing product line as millions of teachers are using it day to day. And B, making sure our new generation of product lines will be hitting our release date and time.
Just to clarify, so Promethean it's a company that develops like educational tools for teachers.
So Promethean, the full name is Promethean World. It's a ed tech company. Essentially, we provide active panel theory that hunts in a lot of classrooms wall, essentially. So these are the pretty big 65-inch to 86-inch interactive touch-enabled panels, come with its own smart apps. Android apps can be connected to internet, obviously, audio, visual, multimedia interaction with the kids that allow children and teacher to interact with a pen, with their finger, and with a remote.
Are there any specific focuses or challenges you guys really need to make sure you hone in on for education software specifically that presents?
Yes, actually, it's a quite unique space. For example, our user will be mainly the teachers, and the teachers will be walking up to the panel and use it. Their daily routine involves raising their hand, either use their finger or with a pen, and write on a panel. As we all know, if you keep doing this for a long time, your arms, your shoulder, your back's going to kill you. Promethean actually have our UX team actually went out and did a lot of investigations, building the heat maps with a smart device tied to teachers' arms. And we invite a whole bunch of teachers from different ranges, different background, and ask them to do a list of, say, 20 daily activities, right? And we record the heat map from the device tied onto their wrist. And by doing that, then we can evaluate the different UX proposal. Where do we pop up the application? Where the buttons should be? Do we ask them to click, slide, or move? And eventually we will settle down on the best way that gives them the least stress to their shoulder, for example. In our current product line, Active Panel 7, we've received wonderful feedbacks from teachers who just, you wouldn't believe how much that helps their daily routine and makes them so much more willing to use the panel.
It seems we've come a long way from like chalk and blackboard as used to use.
Yes, definitely. But believe it or not, I've actually interviewed software engineers who used Promethean panel in her elementary school. It's a candidate from UW. So it's been there. Promethean is actually the world's number one provider for interactive panel in this space.
So starting from your education, how did you eventually progress to this point in your career?
I think my experience will be quite unique because I obviously grew up in China and I got my bachelor's there. And my bachelor's was mechanical engineering. So I graduated with that degree and I worked for a couple of years. And at that time, my family bought me the first set of computer, and that's in the early 90s. It's kind of a rare thing, and I fall in love with it. So I was like, I really want to get a computer degree, except in China, you cannot do that because government paid for your bachelor's education. You're supposed to return the value by working in that field. So that's how I decided, well, I need to come abroad and come to US, and that allowed me to changed my major into computer science and got my master's degree in CS. So that's how I ended there. Looking back, I think the background as a mechanical engineer definitely also helped in finding my first job here in US. Coming from a mixed background has brought me a lot of, I would say, a different perspective versus a pure CS background.
Okay, that's great. And yeah. In those first few years of software and engineering and working with computers, were there any really big lessons you learned that you've carried on throughout your career since then?
Oh boy, yes. The very first job I got was with a company called Trilogy in Austin, Texas. And back in year 2000, it was the hottest company in town. And it was also one of the top tier private companies in the country. The CEO, Joe Lamont, also was a dropout from Stanford. Eventually got Bill Gates to have a lunch with him in midway between Austin and Seattle. The first thing Bill Gates told him was, you pay your new hire too much, because Trilogy was beating Microsoft at getting the Stanford new grads at about 3-1 ratio. That being said, Trilogy did a very bad job at training these new grads. So Joe's model was, you hire the best and brightest and you throw them into the field and see who survives. So we were that one of those. Well, I didn't graduate from Stanford or any of the Ivy League, but I was lucky enough to went through the interview process and got hired. So I was one of the very about 10%-ish that didn't come from Ivy League at Trilogy. So we got assigned a first job with EMC, and it's two of us, me and Eric Braun, and we need to go build a smart online configurator for them. This is in 1998, right? Before the dot-com bubble bust, and anything involves online and smart just carries crazy values. EMC was showering Trilogy with money to get us to build that. Okay. So they spent a lot of money. Two of us, we were like, okay. So we met the project manager once, got introduced, essentially get handed over a name, an email account of a EMC engineer. Says, hey, you're going to build this configurator so EMC can sell their storage systems online. Anything you need about the requirements come from this engineer. So we exchanged message with the engineer. It was a 6-week job. The final 2 weeks, they actually flew that engineer from Boston to Austin. The guy slept on the floor of our cubicle because we were, that 6 weeks, we were just working crazy hours. I remember I billed 96 hours a week for, you know, multiple weeks. And the final 2 weeks, he just slept there. And me and Eric Braun will turn around, kick him, and wake him up and say, hey, take a look. Anyway, at the end date, we deliver something that the EMC engineer was thrilled and so happy. I was like, oh, this is wonderful. It's exactly how I liked it. And we turned it in. We're like, okay, good job. Me and Eric would pat each other's back. So a week later, we received feedback from EMC and says the client refused to pay for it. I was like, what? The dude loves it. Well, it turns out the contract to sell this configurator is to EMC's marketing division. Their marketing division needed to buy this because it's so complicated how, you know, they need to configure the database, sort of the data racks, very expensive multi-million dollar system we're talking about, right? They cannot figure it out without multiple engineers' involvement and multiple days. So they want to make it simpler. Now, except no one from the marketing team was involved, and we were not told who the actual client, the audience, the user are. We built the configurator as complicated as the engineer described it. it was the most complicated configured ever built in Trilogy's history. And the marketers still couldn't figure out how to use it. Needless to say, it left a very bad taste in Eric Braun and my mouth for sure. Within 6 months, Eric Braun had enough and he left the Trilogy. He's since had a wonderful career. I suspect this first project experience had a big impact on him, same as it has on me. So it always remind me from there on, it's like, okay, cut the crap. I don't care who my boss, what my boss tell me. I need to know precisely who my end user is, who my client is. I need to talk to them. The motto is trust but verify. You trust what you heard, but you better do your own verification. So until you've verified it, you don't know what you don't know, and anything could happen.
Yeah, I think that's valuable advice just for anyone, especially when they're creating user-oriented products.
Right.
So that was obviously like in the 1990s. Yes. The beginning of this dot-com boom. How would you say that the tech industry has changed since you first started?
It's quite a journey from where we were at 1990s to the 2000s, the teens, and now we're at 2022. I've witnessed how it was always a developer going and do it with some manual tester to Microsoft starting to say, no, no, that wouldn't cut it. Look at Windows and Windows 95 to Windows 7, Vista and Windows 7. Like it takes 6,500 engineers spending multi-years building out. And the complexity of the tests required is just crazy. At Microsoft, then they have championed the concept of SDET, software engineer in test. And those are basically developers, but they focus in writing automated tools. That has dominated the next 10 years from 2000 to 2010-ish. Fast forward to about 2012, the world changed again and says, well, yes, it's great, but it's too expensive. For one guy's job, I need to hire two guys. When I was at Microsoft, it's essentially one SD plus one SDET. It's a pair. You have a duo. You do one feature together. From there on, it was unified engineering concept. That means, hey, we need to do TDD, test-driven development, but we better making sure the developer that we hired can do both. You don't require an actual SDET. Or, you know, maybe every four or five developers, you have one manual QA or one SDET to help. That has continuously progressed. I think unified engineering right now is still the trend. And the automated test has progressed so much. When I look at market, I see a lot of .io automated tests with AI assistance that can make it very easy. You could literally have a manual tester to go and script out the automated sort of WebSocket test at today's age. They actually don't need to know all the plumbing. And the underneath engine will be smart enough to hook up everything, pick up the proper controls, IDs, and even auto-stitch it when certain property of IDs and controls changed slightly. A lot of that has been progress, but the whole concept of the engineering world has been, how do I make the biggest bang with my buck? This is my budget. I can hire X amount of developers, engineers, let's call it. How do I make the most impact, feature, productivity with that number of headcounts?
Tech changes, but money is forever, you could say.
Yes. Like to say, I mean, it doesn't sound sexy or fancy, right? But we are hired to any company to do one job and one job only. That is to help that company make more money. I mean,
depends on how business
unless
goes.
You're on your own boss, then your goal is to how to make the most money for yourself.
Yep, that definitely makes sense. So like you said, you have been doing this for a while. Over all that time, has there been a consistent element that has been the most frustrating or challenging part of working in software for you?
Many are. The fact they need engineering manager or engineering director, it's really because there's many things about releasing a software, very little of it has anything to do with coding. That's a Microsoft sort of phrase we've always referenced. And it's true. There's a lot of super smart developers out there. Obviously, without them, nothing can happen. No doubt about that. We got to have the smart developers, right? Dedicated staff that knows what they're doing. But other than that, it's easy if you come from a startup, you're building a one-man, you know, website. Once you start to grow the company, the business, and you need to have, you know, a product that requires 5-10 developers, that's the Scrum team. Then all of a sudden, you need to have Scrum Masters. You need to have the balance of dev versus QA, no matter if you do split Microsoft approach or the unified engineering, somebody's going to wear different hats. And that developer and that QA better not be the same person. And you need to start talking about, oh, I have a feature that requires 3. How do I integrate? Guess what? That integration requires certain documentation. It requires automated baseline test case to making sure it always stick. You're talking about releasing the software into the Wild Wild West to the public. Then you better have a operations team. You need to have some kind of DevOps control, support the website, some operation for urgent support calls. Something bad happened. And it's a showstopper. Everyone else in the engineering team drop it, and we need to fix it. We need to roll it out tonight. That happens in SaaS world. A lot of those had nothing to do with actual coding, but how you do it smartly, how do you set up your defense step by step? How do you audit and always keep on top of that when something broke, when one of the 10 developers checking a bad line of code, it breaks the build. None of the other developers can progress until that is fixed, right? How do you A, eliminate the risk of that or reduce to minimal, and B, it's going to happen no matter how hard you try. Then how do you invent a system that can allow you to pinpoint precisely who did what that caused this in a few minutes and revert it back and unblock the rest of the train, right? So that's just with one Scrum team. And then as you're talking about a division, then all of a sudden you are talking about like my previous job at Globus, each quarter we will be rolling out about 10 to 15 projects to different clients. So think about different trains and you have multiple Scrum teams. So good luck getting that out. A lot of time I feel like I'm dealing with the orchestra and I'm the maestro. So I am obviously giving commands. This need to happen when, by who, and how we integrate, who owns what. But at the same time, I'm hearing feedback. My ears, I'm hearing, and that's my way of auditing. I'm consistently auditing and detect something went wrong. The moment it went wrong, it says, okay, how do we fix it? So that's typically what the job of an engineering manager or engineering director. And then on top of all these, you can't just be technical, right? Because yes, I'm building it, but as my lesson learned from my first project, if it's not something your product manager wants or your end client wants, it's all for nothing. Yeah. The more you build, the worse a hole you dig yourself into. So it's also my job to go talking with my first tier partners, in this case, going to be the product manager or product director, and find out precisely what they want. And quick prototype, show and tell, different triage sessions. There's a lot of those changeable with operations to making sure, yes, we are meeting the expectation. Yes, we are on the right track in terms of the schedule. Yes, we are, while we're developing new feature, new product, we are fulfilling all our existing product line requirements, right? So, because that's where what brings the dough in and pays our salary.
The difference between just like, a regular developer and then our manager or director seems like requires different skill sets. Do you have any tips for students who are looking for a job in tech, whether during the interview process or how to maybe excel once they land a job and eventually find themselves in a management sort of role?
I would say when I set out, I didn't intend to become a manager. They promoted me to a manager when I was performing better than all my peers. And then after that, and I realized it's a totally different game, because as an individual contributor, you only need to care about, oh, that's the job. That's the feature I need to code up, or that's the feature I need to test out. Your manager is going to tell you when it needs to be happened. And if you failed, you only have your manager to answer to. But as a manager, you will obviously, A, will need to have responsibility for all the projects, multiple projects. You will be dealing with a lot of engineers. There are different personalities. You need to know how to talk to them. Each of these engineers will be naturally in their different career ladder, right? From junior, intern, junior, mid-level, senior, principal level. And you need to deal with them differently. Also, personality-wise, you need to learn how to talk to them. There are plenty of costs. I think once you, if you have aspiration to become a manager, there's plenty of LinkedIn, there's plenty of online training costs that you can take to prepare you for that. Some of those management specific training costs will be very helpful. If you don't do it, you will regret. And then as a manager, obviously, I would say, at least for my own experience, I see myself as a referee. Sort of like think about the referee on a soccer game on a field. So you have your teams, two teams playing. What's my job? My job is making sure it's a fair playing field. I set out the rules. Everyone agrees by it, and then I enforce it. And with the engineering management, that's exactly the same. So that means, A, if you're going to do something dramatic about the whole engineering platform, framework, stack, technology stack, change, etc., you better get the whole team to review and agree on it. Unanimous consent is something that's best for the long term. There are managers who would just say, it's my team and I've made the decision, just go do it, right? Those wouldn't last long. The moment they move on or they get promoted, somebody else is in that position, that decision will get challenged. And it end up will costing the engineering team more time because you just zigzag different turns and people lose morale. And I have a typical example. When I took over a QA team at a previous company, I inherited 7 test framework and it grew to 7 test framework in the previous about 10 years. Every time the QA manager comes, a new guy comes and says, oh, you know, this old framework, who's still using it? This is a better one. Let's go do it without bothering to retire the old one. So everything is still running. Not one person in the whole department understands all 7 of them. And it's just crazy maintaining all of them. So we get together and says, well, we've got to change this. It's not sustainable. We need to list out our goals and priorities. What do we want to achieve in our testing goals? What are the best layers? And we decided we only need 3. Then that's easy. Everyone agrees on it. Then for these 3, we need to pick the right framework for each of them. I request the whole team to go looking for existing technologies, tools, whatever, open source, paid for, and they come back with more than 12. I start seeing the argument. Everyone seeing what I found is the best, right? So I was like, okay, that's okay. Let's prototype it. Each of you who think what you're proposing is right, then A, tell me which layer it should belong to. And B, give me a prototype test, automated test case in that particular stack or tool. And we regroup the next week. We start reviewing all of those. And each of them now had spent the time to actually go build up something and run it. And they can easily tell you, here's the pros and here's the cons. And we go through. So existing 7 plus the new 12, we evaluate about 20. With real data, the decision comes painless. It's really painless because everyone realizes, you know, once we decided we're going to go adopt these 3 frameworks day in and day out. Yeah, it's not about pride. It's about how to make my own next few years easier, most efficient and productive. Quickly, people agreed on 3. We retired all the rest. And that 3 framework has been adopted widely. And even after I left the company, I think it still lasted. And that's the whole key is you get people to agree on the set of rules. And with unanimous consent, it's much easier. You don't need to really enforce it because they wanted that. At least for me, I think that's the best way to lead a team.
managing, not ruling. So I think that is all the questions we have for you. Do you have anything to add on, Anita?
No, I think that's everything. So thank you so much for interviewing with us, Jeff, and good luck at your new job. I heard it's something to do with crypto. So very fun and exciting. Yeah, I'm
quite excited about it. Thank you, Anita.
All right. You have a great rest of your day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.